This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, our first guest this week had a momentous few weeks that culminated in President Obama's recent visit to Michigan State University to sign the Farm Bill. Dr. Doug Buehler, who's the director of MSU Ag Bioresearch for the College of Ag and Natural Resources, served as one of the key point persons for the presidential visit and actually spent some face time with the president in the process. Doug, have you recovered?
I don't know. It was quite a week, I can tell you that.
Well, give us a little bit. You were working with Secret Service and weeks ahead of the visit. Yeah. Give us a little bit of the inside baseball here.
Well, we got called, would have been basically a week before it happened on Friday night, and that was the beginning of it. And actually, I didn't immediately get the call, and I had to listen to the voicemail three times to make sure that what I was really hearing. But then on Saturday, the advance team from the White House came in, and we met with them, and we talked about some options of things that we'd like to show, and we thought we had some nice ideas. And then on Sunday, the Secret Service arrived, and they looked at the buildings and all sorts of things, and then our plans were basically scrapped. And then we went through a set of different ideas of things we could do. But you know, to make a long story short, we learned very quickly that you don't negotiate with the Secret Service.
Were you impressed with how thorough they were and the questions they asked, or was it overkill?
Oh, I don't think it was overkill. I mean, you think about, you know, just the situation and the gravity and really who was here. I mean, the President of the United States was here. So, no, they were very professional. Things were made very clear of how we would proceed. And, you know, as you can imagine, as this thing moved along and we learned more about the intent and those types of things changed. But I thought it was very well organized. We knew well in advance what we needed to do. But again, this isn't something that you do every day, so you don't quite know what to expect. But you know, it was certainly a great honor and pleasure to be part of this and to be able to represent the university and be in the middle of something in this way.
Well, to have the President of the United States is one thing, but to have him then signing historic legislation, as you well know, that doesn't happen. That this type of a bill, this type of legislation is signed outside the Beltway.
Yes, it was a great honor, and certainly, you know, we have to recognize the role of Senator Stabenow in all of this. And you know, we were also very proud that a lot of our faculty, groups of our faculty, had opportunities to have input throughout this process. And so this is really, I think, a special farm bill, I guess, for Michigan State University and the state of Michigan in general.
Doug, I want to come back to the Farm Bill and its importance to MSU Ag Bioresearch and Michigan State University in general, but you did have an opportunity also to go on a tour with the president of MBI right here in town, and what was that like?
It was really quite an incredible experience. It was a short tour, but what we really did was try to pick a few topics to really try to show the president how we use fundamental research to address real world problems. And that was my role in the tour. I had the opportunity to basically introduce to him what we were going to do. And so probably my most vivid memory was waiting for him to come down the hall and around the corner. And he came around the corner in about two steps. His hand was shaking my hand. And I had about a minute and a half with him. And you know, you need to be ready, and I was just wondering, you know, what's gonna go through my mind? Am I gonna be able to hold it together when the President of the United States is standing there, eye to eye? And that's a memory that I think I will have forever.
I guess it gives me goosebumps when you're talking about it. But what was your impression of the president during the tour? I mean, you were walking along. I mean, some of it was give us an idea of some of the research that we showcased.
Well, we had basically three stops out there. One of them was to talk about how the pilot plant at MBI functions in terms of helping take research discoveries from the laboratory to application. A second one was a fairly unique project that we have taking agricultural residues from extracting energy and chemicals and converting it into animal feed, some of the work that's led by Dr. Bruce Dale, who probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with. And then the third stop was to highlight our world-class plant science capabilities, where Professors Dave Dauchus and Robin Buell talked about their work on combining fundamental genomics and really high-end science to address issues in terms of food supply, food safety, food security, things like that. And we also had a couple of graduate students that got a chance to be there. So you can imagine what an experience that was for those graduate students.
So you took some of the cornerstones of MSU Ag Bioresearch in terms of energy, in terms of food, et cetera, and picked representative research to show the president what's going on?
Yeah, you hit it very well, and that was really where I talked about with my couple of minutes with the president was to talk about that, you know, this is what we're really dedicated to here, that we have a long history and a culture of collaborative, multidisciplinary research, and these problems are big. And they're complicated, and we feel that we're uniquely situated to be real leaders in terms of moving this type of thing forward.
Well, my guest is good friend Doug Buehler. He's the director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. He also had the pleasure of going on a tour of certain research facilities on the MSU campus during President Obama's recent visit to MSU to sign the Farm Bill. Doug, before we get into the Farm Bill specifically, during the tour that we had talked about prior to the break, were you impressed with the president's questions about the research, or was he primarily listening?
No, he actually asked a number of questions, and he was, you know, basically saying, well, what does this mean? And he was on a very, very tight schedule, and it was interesting to watch that, you know, who tells the president that he has to be quiet now when we're moving to the next stop. So it was interesting to sort of watch some of that dynamic. And President Simon was his host and kind of his tour guide to walk him through. And I suspect that that there was a couple situations where she knew we needed to move on, but you know, what are you going to do? But also, just to point out, you know, we also had Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack was with the president. And the secretary has been here before, and actually we had him here as part of our graduation ceremonies a couple of years ago. And so it was a good return visit to him, and he got to see some of these things again. And so we were also, I want to make sure that point out that he was also part of this. And, of course, we're always glad to have him visit our campus as well.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Vilsack, because I think in President Obama's speech, he mentioned that Vilsack coined the term or the phrase that this is more than an agriculture bill. This is an energy bill. This is a conservation bill. He also said this is a research bill. Let's talk a little bit about the research implications of the Farm Bill.
Well, we have been, our position on the Farm Bill from, you know, its early drafts is that we were very supportive of it. From a research standpoint. Obviously, we'd always like, you know, as much money as we can get, but it really solidified some things. And I think, again, as was pointed out, it is a strong research bill for agriculture. And, you know, a lot of times because of the relatively small portion of the full Farm Bill that the research part is, it kind of gets lost. But when you look at that and really how that builds the cornerstone for a lot of our programs, it allows us the capacity that we have to do research and also some really critical competitive grant programs that we are competitive for and are important to Michigan agriculture are also part of that Farm Bill.
How do the priorities of the Farm Bill in terms of research initiatives align with not only the initiatives of MSU Ag Bioresearch, but of Michigan State University?
Well, you know, we really think about, from my perspective, is we're always looking, you know, we're working at the intersection of fundamental research and real-world problems. And that is really a big deal for us. And so you think about, at least in my mind, what is the land-grant mission in the 21st century? To me, that's where we're going. The problems are still there. We still need to feed people. We still need to clothe people. We have energy issues. How do we combine all of those things with an increasing world population, finite land, water, and air resources, and bring all these things together? And so when we look at, you know, how do we take the latest discoveries that are happening in labs all over the world and apply them to these problems, whether it's in, you know, animal genetics, plant genetics, energy conversion, all of these things that we work on, and then also being recognized that the environment and natural resources in a state like Michigan, where the natural resources, tourism, agriculture all blend together, is really, really important to us. So how do we bring all those things together to be competitive, to have world-class scientists working on these real problems is really what I think we're all about.
And this new farm bill, too, and I know this is something Senator Stabenow has been working with you and others in Michigan for a long time, but there's quite a bit of support for the specialty crops folks here in Michigan, the fruit and vegetable people out there. I imagine that spills over into the research arena as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a program called the Specialty Crop Research Initiative that was originally authorized in the 2008 Farm Bill. And that program is very, very important to us, and actually it needed to be reauthorized, so we actually have had a couple of very big grants and big important projects and a little bit in limbo that we've been able to hold together that will now move forward in full force. And so we're very excited to have that Specialty Crop Research Initiative back, and particularly because the last 2 years of the program, Michigan State has gotten more money out of that program than any other institution in the country. It also dovetails well with Project Green, which is a program that is state money that supports the plant agriculture industries. And so we're very pleased to have that back in place, reauthorized. They actually increased the amount of funding. There's also a program in organic research and extension that we have been successful and really fits. Again, you think about all how these things fit together, the local agriculture, the nutrition parts, and how do we put all these things together. So, yeah, we're like I said earlier, we're really pleased with the way the things worked out, and now we can get back to what we do and helping our scientists be competitive for these funds and getting a lot of this uncertainty behind us.
You mentioned Bruce Dale earlier in our conversation and his work with cellulosic ethanol. The president has been pretty public in his statements about alternative energy and options for petroleum, et cetera. We've been on top of that at Michigan State for quite some time. This farm bill has an energy title in it as well. Is there some increased funding for energy-related research as well?
Yeah, I mean, where a lot of this comes is really at the intersection of where agriculture and energy meet. And, you know, this food versus fuel debate is something that's not going to go away. And one of the interesting things about some of the work that's being done now is it takes some of the residues of crop production, extracts energy and chemicals, but then also creates a fairly high-quality animal feed. So it really kind of closes that loop. And so those are the types of things that I think we really need to be looking at. I mean, all of these things are going to need to fit together to bring a future together, but we've really got to look at those things because there is going to be a pretty fine balance in terms of how do we do all these things again with finite water and land resources.
Doug, we'd be remiss if we didn't look at a major portion of the Farm Bill or at least talk about it, and that's the SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. A lot of the money goes, I mean, people think of food stamps and things of that nature, but there's a lot of research that goes on in the nutrition arena as well.
Yeah, that's certainly an important part for us and certainly is a big impact on our extension programs. And, you know, this really all fits together. I mean, you talk about it is an agriculture bill, but it's also a food bill. And if people are eating better, have resources to buy these products, that increases markets. And so it really all fits together in a way that you think about all of the things that we do at this university. All of these things fit together in really an important way.
And not just Michigan State University. I mean, this farm bill has implications not only for the land-grant universities, but virtually any major research university in the United States.
Yeah, and that's really important because, to me, I keep coming back to this notion of application of fundamental research to real-world problems. There's a lot of partnerships that we can build with other institutions. You know, a lot of the things that they're doing at the University of Michigan, for example, around health, around nutrition, we're beginning to try to look at better ways of how we link to some of that because we do things that they don't do and vice versa. And so we've all got to work together to bring all of the best brains and the best ideas together to address the problems.
Doug, we've got about 30 seconds left, and then in the next segment we're going to be talking with Senator Stabenow about the Farm Bill and some of the titles in that Farm Bill. But going back again to your role with the president and all that sort of thing, you mentioned what it was like waiting to speak to the president of the United States. I mean, now you've had a couple of weeks to reflect. I mean, for you, how would you summarize the entire experience?
That's a very difficult question. Why don't you ask me a little bit more about the Farm Bill or something that might be easier to answer. It's the bottom line is it's something I'll never forget. People have asked me if I've come down from it. I say, well, I do until I start talking about it again, and I think that's gonna be a while before that excitement and just that honor of being allowed on behalf of this university to play that role is something I'll never forget.
And as you get older, et cetera, I mean, that's going to be, it probably have to be right up there among the top highlights of your career.
I got to believe it's going to be hard to beat.
I've been talking with Dr. Doug Buehler. He is the director of MSU Ag Bioresearch. Doug, thanks so much for sharing not only your input on the and insights on the Farm Bill, but also your personal experiences with the President of the United States.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Whether you're moving across town or across the country, relocating to a new job or a new city is always a challenge. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, wherever you go, you'll have an instant circle of friends on hand to help you get settled and get connected. With more than 100 clubs and affiliates around the world, there's a Spartan in just about every city. And as an MSU Alumni Association member, you'll quickly feel right at home. Wherever you go, community, connections, careers, and class, four great reasons to visit alumni.msu.edu today to activate your membership in the largest Spartan organization in the world. That's alumni.msu.edu, the Michigan State University Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes, inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, what a pleasure to talk about the recent passage of the Farm Bill with a person who had more to do with it than anyone else, our own Senator Debbie Stabenow. Debbie is the chairwoman of the Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry. Senator, it's always good to talk to you, and we appreciate your time. This Farm Bill, given all the blood, sweat, and tears that went into it, where does this rank in terms of the successes you've had during your long legislative career?
Well, Cook, this is right up at the top, I have to say. You know, when I really step back and think about the important things for Michigan, I always tell people that we don't have an economy or a middle class unless we make things and grow things. And on the making things side, I was very proud to be playing a central role in helping our auto industry get back on their feet. And on the growing side, this is absolutely at the top. And I have to say, in terms of complexity and the breadth of what this covers, you know, it's actually 12 different bills that are all connected together. And the traditional of what we consider commodity and farm programs, but also the major investment our country makes in conservation, as you know, and an energy title, a trade title, and nutrition, and research. It goes on and on, and every piece of it is really important for Michigan.
Well, I'd like to get into some of those titles here in a second, but as a proud retiree of Michigan State University and the College of Ag and Natural Resources, I have to ask you this question. Did the White House come to you with a recommendation on where this could happen, or is this something you suggested to them? How did it happen that it was at Michigan State University?
It was my idea. I had been saying for a couple of months, first it started out as kind of banter. I was saying, you can't sign, you know, when we get this bill done, you can't sign it in the White House in D.C. You have to sign it, you know, out somewhere in the country that symbolizes what this bill means. And everybody would kind of chuckle, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I said, no, I mean it. That's what you need to do. And then as we went along, I said, you know, the place that you need to sign it is the premier agricultural research institution. MSU is really the first land-grant university in our country. And, you know, I started talking to them more about MSU. And when they really focused on it, they said, you're absolutely right. That's where we need to go. So I was really pleased that they accepted my invitation.
Well, all of us who love Michigan State University couldn't have been more proud of that event and that signing here at the university. Let's come back to the Farm Bill for a moment. I know that you've been a big, big advocate of conservation, and there's a major conservation title. I sit on the Ingham County Farmland and Open Spaces Preservation Board, and it looks like there's going to be even more money to preserve some of these wonderful, not just farmlands, but other fragile properties as well.
Absolutely. It's really, I think, one of the most important parts of the Farm Bill. I mean, obviously, we want to support our farmers and ranchers with the kind of programs that make sure that nobody loses the farm because of a few days of bad weather or market conditions. But a really important tool for farmers and something that impacts all of us is our ability to protect our land and our water and our air. And this is the first Farm Bill that's been written where there are actually more dollars, more investments in the conservation title than in the traditional commodities title. And we have done a number of different things while reorganizing things. You know, there were 23 different programs in conservation, and seemed like every time somebody had a new idea, they just added a new program and didn't necessarily look at how it fit. So we reorganized all of it into a way that will allow communities and farmers and conservation groups to use the resources better. And everything from protecting wetlands and grasslands and fragile spaces to a new regional partnerships program where communities can come together, and I wrote this with the Great Lakes in mind, so the Great Lakes very much qualify for this, but bringing together community groups, nonprofits, local units of government, you know, everybody working together to develop broad strategies to protect an area. And in the area of Great Lakes, we all know there are so many different issues that relate to water quality and quantity and so on. Invasive species. So this is an important new area of permanent funding that will allow us to plan long term. And then the biggest policy overall that we have added that's so important for protecting our lands and waters is the fact that when our farmers use crop insurance or they participate in other farm programs that involve federal dollars, they will need now to make a commitment to using best practices for conservation. Now, certainly our farmers, you know, they're our number one stewards. They have more of a stake in our land and water than anybody else. But this permanently connects the two so that when you receive support through the Farm Bill in agriculture, you're committing and now responsible for using conservation practices. So this is a really important policy moving forward.
We're talking about the Farm Bill with Senator Debbie Stabenow. Senator Stabenow, one thing that has been emphasized, but I want to reemphasize it, this bill not only was bipartisan, a major bipartisan effort, but it's going to save, and I've seen estimates between $17 and $23 billion taxpayer dollars. Is that an estimate correct, and where will those savings come from?
It is correct. Overall, we reduce spending by $23 billion, and about $6 billion of that is already figured into what the budget folks do because of this thing called sequestration across the board cuts. So they divide it up into two different pots, $6 billion in one and about $17 in the other. But the whole thing in terms of what we have done in spending reductions is $23 billion. And again, it's I think this is really a case study in making tough decisions, setting priorities, increasing things that work, and decreasing or eliminating things that don't. Direct payments, which are subsidies that have gone to farmers, even in very good times, corn prices high, somebody would get a government check, or if they were low. We've said, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. The most of the money that we have saved is in the commodity title by cutting subsidies. And instead, we're going to partner with farmers who buy crop insurance. So we're going to you know, match those funds to help them get lower prices on crop insurance. But the farmer's going to get a bill, not a check. They're going to pay a premium, and they're not going to get any kind of help unless they have a loss. And then it's like any other kind of insurance. You cover 75-80% of the loss, but you then pay a part of it. So it's risk, what we call risk management, helping farmers to manage their risk. And then we expand crop insurance to more crops so that our cherry growers up in Traverse City will have access now. Our grape growers, blueberries, apples, across the board, we're expanding the insurance model. So it's a way of managing your business, managing your risk, and making decisions based on the marketplace rather than on a government program. So it's not your father's farm bill. So we're fundamentally, you know, changing that. Most of the savings comes by that change.
Yes, we'll be talking with your good friend Jim Byram next in the program, but he's referred to the Farm Bill as moving in many cases from more of a social program now to a business-based program. Would you agree with that assessment?
I do agree with that. I think this is very much a business model, market-oriented. Farmers make decisions on the marketplace, what they want to grow, and then we'll come in behind and support them. And make sure if there's a disaster, there's help there. Make sure, you know, if there's a loss, they can get insurance.
Senator Stabenow, we just got a few moments here, but for people who want to know more about the Farm Bill, I imagine our listeners can go right to your website where there are summaries and synopses of that huge piece of legislation.
Absolutely. You can either go to my website at stabenow.senate.gov. Or we have an agriculture committee website. It's called ag.senate.gov.
Well, Senator Stabenow, congratulations, a heartfelt congratulations on a wonderful effort on your part, bipartisan, good for America. And really, it was a tribute to you as well as to Michigan State University that the president came to Michigan State.
Well, thanks so much. It was a hard fight, long slog, but I'm just so pleased that we got it done.
Senator Stabenow, thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment.
Please find us on Facebook by searching for Greening of the Great Lakes and follow us on Twitter at Green Michigan.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you are instantly connected to a 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back frequent guest and good friend Jim Byram to Greening of the Great Lakes. Jim is the president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association, and he's one among many across the nation that's cheering the recent passage of the Farm Bill. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Kirk, it's always a pleasure.
The president said it's not just a bill to help farmers, but a jobs bill, an innovation bill. It's like a Swiss Army knife. Why is this legislation so important, not only for agriculture, but for everybody in America?
Well, I thought that was a great analogy because certainly the farm portion of the farm bill, if you will, is a small percentage of the total spending. Nutrition is a major issue, and oftentimes it gets lost that that nutrition part of the farm bill is important to agriculture as well, because if we don't have consumers, if we don't have folks in a position that they can buy what we grow, we see diminished markets. So that's an important part. Rural development is a piece that often gets lost as well, and rural development activities that happen in small towns all across the state, from water systems, sewage treatment systems, community facility construction, all sorts of things are important. And many times the Department of Agriculture doesn't really hype the kinds of involvement they have in rural communities as much as they should. But certainly from a farm perspective, I love to say that Michigan's on every page of this farm bill, and I'm plagiarizing that from Senator Stabenow, but with the specialty crop initiatives, the crop insurance advances, the energy title, the conservation programs, it's everywhere, and it's all across Michigan, and we're really excited about it.
Jim, one thing that the president announced in his remarks, as you know, is a Rural America initiative that his people are working on as we speak. I know that the details have not yet been forthcoming, but what do you know about that?
Well, I think we'll see, again, rural development is going to be heavily involved as the primary lead agency, but there's going to be lots of things that happen in rural America. It's going to involve issues such as making sure we have adequate infrastructure, energy, broadband, those kinds of things, those basic requirements. If we're going to see jobs added in rural America, we have to have that infrastructure. Second certainly is going to be investment, and there will be investment, I think, in at least loan opportunities for folks and companies that want to engage in more processing and more value-added and agricultural endeavors in rural parts of the state and rural parts of the country, for that matter, and that's going to be important. Other pieces of the farm bill that will all fold into that include things like the energy title, to encourage more renewable energy, encourage more advances in energy, and not just the first generation biofuels, but the next generation, and then the next generation of bio-based products. Because if we grow it here and make it here, the jobs are here.
Jim, $23 billion or thereabouts in savings to the American people. A lot of folks have looked at farm supports over the years, and then, you know, why do farmers need these direct payments, for example? But that's all been replaced now. It's like Senator Stabenow said, this is not your grandfather's farm bill. Government support on insurance policies, but not direct payments anymore to speak of.
You know, this farm bill really moves from what I refer to as a social program to a business program. It does require farmers to pay attention to look at risk management opportunities and challenges and make decisions on managing their risk with crop insurance and things like that, as opposed to just that direct payment that, and I have to say over the last several years, we've been pretty embarrassed that farmers get direct payments when commodity prices oftentimes are hitting record levels. It just didn't make sense and frankly didn't pass the smell test. So there needed to be major reforms, and certainly Senator Stabenow has made that happen. And Kirk, I have to say that, and I've been doing lots of farm bills for a lot of years, but if Debbie Stabenow hadn't chaired the Senate Ag Committee, quite frankly, I'm not sure we'd have a farm bill. Her tenacity, her ability to bring people together in this bipartisan, bicameral piece of legislation, and there's not been a lot of these kinds of bills passed Congress in the last few years. She gets a lot of credit for getting this done.
My guest is Jim Byram. He is the president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Jim, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. There will be some cuts to that program over the next 10 years, somewhere in the $7 to $8 billion range. Is that going to adversely affect folks, or is that just going to clean up the program? What's your take on that?
Well, personally, I believe it'll clean up the program. There's those that believe there will be people that are disenfranchised from the program that may have been involved in the past. But it looks to me, as I think many of us have looked at the cuts, that they're really tightening eligibility. They're making sure that they do things right, that there's not double dipping, that taking some people off SNAP rolls that probably shouldn't have been there, like there was a college student problem, college students getting SNAP benefits when they were enrolled at places like Michigan State. Those kinds of things, cleaning them about cleaning up the program, I think, are where the bulk of the cuts are. And, you know, it's interesting when you look at a piece of legislation, when you have the folks on the far left upset and the folks on the far right upset, gee, that's probably a pretty good compromise piece of work.
Yeah, you're right in the middle of that, and you absolutely, very well stated. Jim, as you know, with any piece of legislation that massive, there are going to be some folks that are going to be, you know, picking at certain things. But there's one issue that I've become aware of regarding a country of label origin that have some of the livestock folks upset. And for reasons that may not be real apparent, not so much that it's a consumer-related issue, but that it could lead to some trade wars with Mexico and with Canada. Your take on that?
Country of origin labeling is an issue that we were involved in. I know there's some folks disappointed it wasn't in the Farm Bill. We're disappointed, but frankly, politics is the art of the possible. The country of origin labeling regulation that's in USDA or promulgated by USDA is actually a relatively popular proposal. Folks want to know what country the food they're buying comes from. There was a proposal that would have mitigated the issue and resolved the issue. Unfortunately, the livestock groups weren't willing to accept that compromise, and hence it fell off the table in the Farm Bill negotiations. An all-or-nothing strategy wasn't going to be successful. Unfortunately, we are where we are today. The USDA's COOL proposal will be before the WTO. I'm confident of that. Canada and Mexico will both have it before the WTO, and it may or may not survive there. But the issue that we have going forward is that Canada and Mexico are going to be upset that that COOL is a fact in the United States, country of origin labeling, and that if there's beef that comes from Canada, it will be labeled as a product of Canada. It seems that it would have made sense to look at some of the compromise proposals like a NAFTA label or a North America label, but unfortunately some groups weren't willing to accept that, so we are where we are. I've been working closely with the Canadians on the kinds of things they may be proposing, and just want to make sure that we don't totally anger our number one trading partner.
Yeah, I think a compromise sounds reasonable, because then you're giving something to the consumers who want to know, in many cases, where their food is coming from and whether it's locally produced and all that sort of thing. But then you're also sensitive to some of the logistics and some of the supply chain issues that the livestock industry has to face.
Well, really well stated. And, you know, the Canadian border is a border. And the irony is, in Michigan, we often don't think of it as an international border, but it is. And while we just kind of deal with it every day, that, hey, we go back and forth pretty easily, there are different issues on different sides, and it'll take a while for this one to work out.
Jim, we got about 30 seconds here, but for our listeners out there, what's the take-home message in terms of the impact and the importance of passing this Farm Bill?
I think if one looks at the Farm Bill from a Michigan perspective, specialty crop title, mandatory funding, that's never happened before. The specialty crop title didn't even exist until Senator Stabenow put it in the last Farm Bill. That's huge for Michigan with our diversity. Secondly, the conservation title that focuses an awful lot of attention on the Great Lakes and making sure we maintain and improve water quality is absolutely critical. The energy title to look at efficiency, to look at new renewable energy sources and encourage more energy, especially as we have a lack of energy resources and infrastructure in rural Michigan. Those are all critical titles, critical issues for Michigan, and frankly, we're excited to start engaging in all of those programs.
Well, Jim, also very well stated, and it's always a pleasure talking with you. I've been speaking with Jim Byram, who's the president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Jim, thanks so much for being on the program.
Kirk, it's always a pleasure again.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today, joined again by Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon for our regular discussion on all things MSU. And President Simon, I'd love to start by getting your reflections on the historic February 7th visit to campus by President Obama. Just reflect a bit on your time with him and kind of what that means to the university and our alumni, Senator Stabenow, who worked so hard on the Farm Bill.
Well, it really is extraordinary that the president would move out of the White House for a bill signing. It's just not something that just doesn't happen. I think it's a tribute to Senator Stabenow and the work that she did on the bill. Actually, Senator Leahy was here as part of the delegation. They held a hearing, actually, on the farm bill here a couple of years ago when they thought it was going to be moving much more rapidly. So it's also, I think, a reflection on the role that agriculture plays for the state of Michigan, the diversity of crops, the kinds of things that are part of this new farm bill directly relate to Michigan. So everything just sort of fit together. And so it was a great day, I think, to be a Spartan. It was fun for 2 days to see President will sign farm bill at Michigan State University on all the national media next day, you know, the signing ceremony and all that got such national attention. That was all, I think, terrific. We were able to identify some time with the president and with Secretary Vilsack to talk about projects and the kinds of projects that directly relate to language in the farm bill. And we had a relatively short period of time. MBI was picked in part because of security, because it would be hard to have him sort of go over into a major classroom building in the middle of the day, and in part because part of what MBI does represents the connection with industry and trying to commercialize aspects of the bioeconomy. So we were able to talk a bit about the bioeconomy as it relates to value-added products, not simply fuel, chemicals that are bio-based that would be used in making nylon, as an example, in the process that's at MBI, the fuel technologies that essentially through very creative means let us use corn stover instead of corn, byproducts, be able to create energy and at the same time develop a byproduct of that can be reused for animal feed. So it becomes a very self-contained biosystem, very, very efficient. And finally, we talked about we use potatoes as an example of the connection between the very fundamental genetic work that we've been doing and getting things into the marketplace much more rapidly.
And President Simon, on February 11th, you helped dedicate the new Morrill Plaza on the site where Morrill Hall once stood. I was struck by your comment about, while we're always looking to the future, we always honor our past. Can you just talk more about what the plaza means to that statement?
Well, I really do believe that if you listen to what people are saying about the need for rapid discovery, more rapid connection to real people and their lives, an institution that is prepared to commit to compete with anyone in the world, that's sort of the way we were founded back in 1855. Though at that time agriculture wasn't, or the mechanical arts engineering wasn't exactly the most sought after fields, it was really important to do that. We were a very hands-on, active learning place. We were a place that embraced international activity very early on, the role of women, lots of things that were part of our history. And so when you think about that and Morrill Plaza, it was a way of saying there we have very deep roots here, and that mostly in that part of campus. And then using the materials of Morrill Hall to really recapture that space in ways that are very, very symbolic. And we got to give credit to the students in Paul Naratko's class in planning design, working with Deb Kinney and all of our folks. Great experience for everyone. Great ownership of those students for something that they created for the future. And then we've added the technology to celebrate and commemorate not only the plaza and the history at that spot, but also moving forward the many contributions of faculty.
Lastly, President Simon, Spartan Nation very much in Rose Bowl afterglow still. And could you reflect a bit on what that meant, that whole experience to Spartan Nation, as well as I like how you've been talking about we need Rose Bowl moments in all facets of the university. And could you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. Well, it was a pretty extraordinary experience in California. No matter where you turn, there seemed to be somebody saying, go green, go white, and just an enormous amount of enthusiasm, almost to the point where the outcome, you know, the game, people said, it doesn't matter. But yes, it did matter. but it was sort of that experience right. that people wanted. So everywhere we went, there were just, you know, an overwhelming number of Spartans. People watched it on television. It was one of the most watched games. It was a great game. I think the time leading up to it would suggest that we do intend to run a program, no matter what the circumstances may be, with great integrity, and that when you make those statements on a big stage, you have confidence in the values, you have confidence in people. I think that one of the things I worry about is that people will sort of breathe a big sigh of relief and believe we've made it, when the intention is to keep winning, and to create for them more of these Rose Bowl-like moments. It might not be going back to the Rose Bowl, because we may be in a semifinal game someplace else in the years ahead, or we may be in a different BCS venue. But the intention for the football team is to be able to reset the clock. We go back to 0-0, and we've got to work with people with great leadership within the team, great values, and work as hard as we can to succeed again. And that's part of the lesson of the Rose Bowl, and not to sort of breathe a sigh of relief and say, gee whiz, we made it, now we don't have to worry. You know, it's been so long since we've gotten there. What we want for this program as a symbol is that we intend to continue to accelerate. And we know we have to start from zero again, but we're going to continue to accelerate with great people and with great values. And that's really the metaphor for the university. You know, no matter what happens, we'll pick FRIB. The groundbreaking is just a groundbreaking. We got a lot of work to do, because we intend to be a world leader. Opening the doors of the Broad is just a symbol. We intend to have the programs there be world class. And you can go on and on with the list of activities and programs. What we want to be is not be disrupted by change, but be the disruptive leader of change. And that's the role that Michigan State should play, and it can play. And so when I talk about it then, what was there in the Rose Bowl was a chance for Spartans to come together and really appreciate the university. But they've got to come together every day to do that if we're going to be strong, not just once and whatever. And we want them to come together around sport, because we were second in the Director's Cup, and we want to celebrate field hockey, and when there was only about 600 people watching, or soccer when there were a few more people watching. We want to celebrate those great achievements, because they are great achievements, even though there are not a lot of people watching. Or maybe the people don't think they care, but they should care about every aspect of Michigan State if we're going to be a really great institution. And what we want then is, when I ask people, I said, so we've got some people who don't believe that athletics is key to our existence. So I said, so what would be your Rose Bowl? What would be the kind of thing that would be your moment? And one young woman talked about a very difficult book she's writing on a topic of historical significance, that if she could get it published by Oxford Press, it would be her Rose Bowl moment. And it's the students who are competing in South by Southwest. You know, first, they were going to represent the Midwest. We've only been in that competition a few years. And all of a sudden, you know, we're going to represent the Midwest in South by Southwest on entrepreneurial competition. That's their sort of Rose Bowl. And you can go down the list of things that are not as visible as Rose Bowls and FRIBs and Broads or opening the bioengineering building or the Secchia Center that people sort of can rally around, and there are these wonderful experiences, and that's what makes a university really great. And so hopefully coming out of this Rose Bowl, that people will have this sense of pride in Michigan State, not just in a football team. And they'll have a sense that, we have a collective responsibility to create these Rose Bowl equivalent experiences, these Rose Bowl-like experiences across the university.
President Simon, thank you for sharing your insights. As we close, just anything else you're thinking about or working on that you'd like to share with Spartan Nation?
Well, I think that going back a bit to the budgetary situation, we really are pleased that the governor has recommended 6.1% on a mixture of across the board and a formula that rates for performance. It really is a turnaround, I think, in the state's support. And it will be, though, under contention, because we also know that the past pattern has been the governor's been a high watermark for what we end up getting. And it really is important to recognize that that even though tuition has gone up, actually the rate of growth of higher education budgets over the last 10 years in the state has been relatively flat. And that's because there's just been this shift between tuition and state appropriation. And if we're going to be competitive 20 years from now, we've got to have talent that can be competitive. And that requires education, however inefficient it might be. And the state needs to do its part for public universities if we're going to have the breadth of education that we need.
President Simon, thanks again for joining us on MSU Today.
You're welcome.
Please keep up with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon online at president.msu.edu. And I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. How many times have you been wearing your Spartan apparel in an airport and a voice in the crowd shouts, "Go Green"? Well, that's happened to me in Beijing, Osaka, Kuala Lumpur, and Mumbai, and even in unlikely places like Ann Arbor and Columbus. There's a special bond we Spartans share, and that's at the foundation of everything we do at the MSU Alumni Association. As the world's largest organization of Spartans helping Spartans, MSUAA truly is your personal network for life. From the moment you join, you've added thousands of fellow Spartans to your personal network. People who will pick up the phone and lend a hand just because you share Michigan State in common. That's the ethic that makes Spartans leaders, lifesavers, and world changers. And that's exactly what you'll find when you become an active member of the MSU Alumni Association. If you share this Spartan spirit, join us at alumni.msu.edu.
Sundays at 4 o'clock, it's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus through conversations by MSU President Simon, Spartans A.D. Hollis, sustainability-focused Dr. Kirk Heinze, and me. MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR. Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.